My next author is Robert Rabine. He's the author of Headlights on the Prairie, Essays on Home. Robert, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You live in Indianapolis, but your writing just smacks of Kansas. It is so, I don't want to use the term homespun, but it really evokes Kansas of a certain era. Talk to me about your sense of place and why your stories are so rooted in Kansas.
Well, maybe part of it is that I'm not, when I write, I'm really not trying to project the mythic Kansas or the Kansas that everyone on the two coasts thinks exists. I try to write about Kansas rooted in detail and in actual stories. So I grew up in Dodge City in western Kansas in a very distinct milieu with people who really stand out in my memory. And even though I've lived in Indiana for 20 years, my family and I, we come back at least two times a year, and I come back more like four times a year.
One common thread throughout your stories is there's a lot of tension between western Kansas as home and western Kansas as a place you visit.
Well, you know, I really didn't think much about Kansas as a place or myself as someone who is from here until I left. And then, I've lived away from Kansas pretty much since 1984. And I missed it a lot, but also I just found that a big part of my identity was caught up with Kansas and being from Kansas, and specifically growing up with a father who was in agriculture and farming and ranching. And so from being away for a long time made me realize what Kansas really was all about. And so as a writer, you know, we often say that to get the true sense of place and to really communicate it to readers, you need to not only be an insider to the place, to have insider knowledge of the place, but you need to live away far enough and long enough that you develop kind of an outsider's view of it. You begin to see what's unique and interesting about it because you know how it differs from other places.
One of my favorite stories in your collection, Headlights on the Prairie, is one in which you talk about a bully in junior high who sets his sights on you and how you figure out how to deal with that. Can you talk to me about that story?
Yeah, I guess if it falls into a particular genre, it is a bully story. It's also a story about being new to a place. So when I was in school, I went to Catholic school grades 1 through 8. And then at that time, junior high was 7th, 8th, and 9th. So all of us who went to the Catholic school, we went through 8th grade. And then for 1 year, we went to the junior high and just kind of messed up the whole chemistry for 1 year. And then the next year, all of us went off to high school. So there was a lot of tension and there was a lot of, bumping of horns. And in the story you're talking about, yeah, I am challenged by the bully. He had asked someone, well, who's the toughest kid or who's the fighter coming from Sacred Heart? And someone said it was me. And so he got my name and he thought, well, we have to figure this thing out. So I was really, really surprised. But I'm glad you feel like it's full of a lot of tension, because even though it is a story about a fight, only one punch is thrown in the entire story.
I remember those junior high days, and my own junior high had a pair of girls who were twins who the school would probably once every 3 months just be shaken by these rumors that the Leonard twins had set their sights on someone and that someone was going to get beat up. I don't know that it actually ever happened, but that kind of fight for territory, that just seems like it's a universal theme at that age.
Well, that you had twice the trouble. That's like a bully times two.
Yeah. Robert, can I have you read from one of your stories?
Yeah, sure. I'll read just a little bit from the first chapter. And this is the shortest chapter in the book. And it's, I don't know that it's a representative chapter, because most of the chapters have a lot of dramatization and a lot of scene. But in this chapter, I focus a little bit more on themes, some of the themes of the book. So this chapter is called Why I Hate the Wizard of Oz. Imagine having the land of your birth, a place about which you have complex and wildly ambivalent feelings, reduced to a black and white cartoon. Someone asks you where you're from, and when you reply, Kansas, this well-meaning stranger grins and blurts out, "Where's Toto?" "Oh, that's right. We're not in Kansas anymore." You get this in New York, Indiana, California. Even as far afield as Paris, France, you get it. Kansas, ah oui, les munchkins. How to say that you hail from a place uninhabited by 10 men and sweet little girls in pinafores, a demanding, starkly beautiful place with 20-mile views, sunflowers as big as your head, and night skies so clear that you might believe yourself to have been born among stars. Where the wind blows without cease and flies bite like vampires, and the stink of the slaughterhouse overhangs everything like a toxic cloud. Where it's not unusual for a kid like you to receive his first shotgun at 10, drive a wheat truck at 12, and solo in a Beechcraft Debonair at 14 or 15. Does that sound like Oz, you want to ask? But you don't. Why bother? When the tornado came and swept you away as you knew all along it would, it was not to drop you into some Technicolor fantasy, rather into the same world of Applebee's and Best Buy the jokesters inhabit. That's the context here. That's the reason you refuse to join Dorothy's fan club.
That's Robert Rabine reading from his book, Headlights on the Prairie, Essays on Home. Robert, one of the things I love about your writing is it seems deceptively simple. You have a very straightforward writing style, and it's easy to read your stories and think, I could have written that. And yet you capture this sense of place and that time in your life so beautifully and so effortlessly. Perhaps it's not so effortless.
Well, I have to say, you know, writing is a mixture of really hard work. But there's a lot of joy involved in it, too. And I have to say that I haven't enjoyed writing everything that I've written. I had a novel that was never published that I did 5 drafts of and over a course of 4 years just to learn how to write a novel. But these essays were a lot of fun to write. I took my time with them. I tried to have as much fun as I could with them. And then, you know, the parts that were hard or where things had to be cut or trimmed, I've been writing long enough now that I've just come to accept that. That's just part of the deal.
You're not just a writer. You teach writing at IUPUI. What is it you try to teach your students about writing?
That's a great question. Well, I teach a lot of different writing classes, but the main one that I teach both at the graduate and undergraduate level is creative nonfiction writing. So it's memoir writing. Just my book is a memoir. It's a memoir in essays, I think of it. That's what I teach. One of the things that we really focus on is this idea that when you think about your life, lives aren't lived in months or years or decades, and they're certainly not remembered that way either. Lives are remembered in moments. And one of the first things we do in my class is I ask students to write down 15 moments that they remember from their life. Don't try to interpret them. Don't try to say why I'm doing that, but just a moment you remember vividly, write them down. And then later we start working on telling the story of that moment. And so in Headlights of the Prairie, almost all of the essays came out of this exercise. There's an essay in here about a really terrible racetrack wreck that I saw at the Hutchinson Fair in 1974. And in the wreck, I saw a man stand up on top of his car and he was on fire and his hands were held out from his side in this kind of Christ-like pose. And then he fell to the ground and another man or men came and they wrapped the towel around him and put the fire out. That image was just kind of seared into my brain, but the essay is more a telling of the whole story of how that moment came to be. And this is how you find the material that has impacted you the most. And then the real work is, how do you translate that so that it also can have an impact on readers?
In one of your stories, you talk about getting a horse and what that means to you, not just as owning a horse, but sort of being tied to the land. It seems like that story really taps into the thread throughout of what's our relationship with the land? What's our relationship with Kansas? Is this home? Is this a place to visit? Is this a hobby? Is this a way of life?
Well, you know, one of the things I think it happens when you're raised in a place like Kansas, the way that I was raised. So I was the son of the sixth of seven boys of a family of ranchers and farmers. But my dad also, he and his brother had their hands in a lot of different things. They had a car lot. They had a salvage yard. They sold trucks. And I grew up in a very particular way. And then when I moved away, it made me kind of sad that my kids weren't going to know what that was like, that they were going to grow up in a city, that they were going to become Hoosiers instead of Kansans. And so one of the things that I found myself really wanting to do was to bring them back to Kansas at least twice a year and show them the world that I grew up in. And there was a really interesting moment that happened with my daughter. So I grew up in town in Dodge City, and we drove out into the country to do all of our farming and ranching. And we didn't have a horse. I didn't ride a horse until I was probably 14, 15 years old. And then I rode it quite a bit after that. My dad moved more out of farming and into ranching. But my kids, I brought them out to our ranch, and they've been riding horses. They don't remember the first time they rode a horse. I would put them on the back and lead them around kind of on a pony ride, you know, when they were 2, 3 years old, and they've been riding ever since. So I remember I was on a ride with my daughter. She was about 16 years old at the time. And she turned to me and she said, you know, Dad, you grew up out here, and I know there's no way that I could ever have been as good a rider as you, but how would I compare with you when you were 16 years old? And I kind of laughed, and I said to her, you're a way better horseback rider than I ever was. When I was 16, I was just running around in town. And so I feel like I've, through bringing my kids back and exposing them to this, they think of themselves as sort of honorary Kansans and as honorary, or at least, as my son would put it, part rancher, part city kid.
Robert, I'm speaking to you today at the Kansas Book Festival, where you and the other Kansas notable authors are being recognized. What does it mean to you as a former Kansan, a native Kansan, to come back and be recognized for your writing about Kansas?
It's a great honor. It's so much fun. I mean, not only do I get to come back to a place that I love and receive an award for a book I wrote, but I also get to listen to go to the readings of the other authors, buy their books. I've been to 3 or 4 readings already today, and I've enjoyed them all. One of them was a poetry, another one was a researched book, yet another one was a novel, and I hope this ceremony can go on, and I hope this award continues to be given out, because I think it's a great thing for writers and it's a great thing for Kansas.
Robert, thank you so much for visiting with me today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.